And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. Well, this is a busy week coming up, Dave. We've got primaries in five different places, and it was gearing up. Last week, we had primaries that were significant, and we had a lot of court stuff that was significant. Where do you want to start?
Well, we could briefly mention Michigan.
Okay.
Which voted last Tuesday, and, no surprise. Trump won big. Haley was, I think she got less than 30% of the vote this time, but she's still hanging in. And Biden got, 82 percent. There were 13% that voted non-committal.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think about that? How do you evaluate that?
Well, it's a protest type vote. They certainly, there was an organized effort, and it's an organized by the mostly by the left wing of the party and the pro-Palestinian part of Michigan. There's a large Arab population in Michigan.
The centers of the vote were in the Arab community and in the university towns.
Right.
That was the center of the vote, and they were aiming for 10,000 votes. They got 101,000 votes. If you deduct the number of votes that normally are cast in Michigan for unaffiliated, which is about 20,000 votes, they actually got 81,000 or 82,000 votes above normal.
Right.
That doesn't allow Biden to win Michigan, does it?
Well, he won by 150,000?
In Michigan.
Yeah, so 101,000 is less than that. And you've got to figure certain things. Some of these people are protesting, but they're going to, when confronted with the actual choice of Trump versus Biden, will reluctantly pull Biden. Secondly, you have to understand, we don't know what's going to happen in the Middle East between now and November. I mean, if there's a cessation to the war and there's something that gets rid of Hamas and frees up the Palestinian people, it could actually work to Biden's advantage. The other thing you have to understand is that on the other side, there's a number of voters who wouldn't vote for Trump. So you have to think that some of them will go home to Trump, but some of them won't. So there's going to be a set off there. And if the 150,000 holds, Biden could still carry through if everything else is equal. We just have to see.
You've got a lot of ifs there.
I know. There's a lot of ifs, but there's a lot of ifs in every election. So, I mean, there was a poll this week that had Trump up 48-43 nationally.
I don't think these national polls mean anything.
No.
Because
no,
the count is not national. The count is state by state.
I agree.
Yeah.
Although there's been some sort of trending, but on individual states. By the way, before I forget, there was a poll out in California, where it's a, I guess they call it a jungle primary, where everybody runs and the top two wind up in the playoffs, so to speak. And lo and behold, Steve Garvey, the Republican, shot into the lead.
Isn't that the strategy of
Adam Schiff?
Yeah, he wants it to be between Garvey and him.
Right, right. Because if you add up all the other Democrats, Barbara Lee and Porter, Garvey ain't going to win.
No, that's right. And it's inconceivable that the Barbara Lee voter is going to vote for Garvey.
Right.
Right. Now, they may stay home. That's a different matter. But not all of them will stay home.
Right. Well, I remember when I lived in California, Garvey was the golden boy of the Golden States Republican Party. And then it came out as he was getting ready to run that he had fathered a couple of illegitimate children with different women. and that you know, that kind of put a kibosh on his candidacy.
Is Garvey as stupid as Herschel Walker?
No, he's not as stupid as Herschel Walker, but he's still got the same problems that he had before.
Yeah.
And also, he has an age problem. He's in his 70s. You know, for to elect a first-term senator in their 70s is not the usual way of doing things.
Not so, when your presidential candidate is arguing that his opponent is too old.
Correct.
So
yeah, but we'll worry more about California when June rolls around and the primary rolls around there. Meanwhile, you know, the big news I think this week is coming up centers around the State of the Union, which always evokes good memories between the two of us. Since
yes, we met watching that particular speech by Obama.
Yeah, his first one.
Yeah.
And little did we know that...
it would lead to so many years of nauseating talk. I mean, incisive analysis.
That's it. It's going on 14 years now. 13.
Wow. You know, wow.
13 or 14 years.
Yeah.
So, who knew? Who knew? But this one is kind of interesting.
But you think that wait a minute, you think the speech is important. But what about the various court cases? Aren't they important?
Yeah, they are important. You know, but right now they're in limbo.
But isn't that important?
No, we're waiting for decisions.
Ah.
So there's, you know, and we're waiting for the one argument in April. With the immunity case. The Florida case is in limbo pending what happens to Fani Willis, who made a real error of judgment, but it may not hurt her in that regard. There was some comment there that what's been proven is that she might face some sort of administrative sanction of the bar, but not a disqualification. So we'll see what happens there. And we're also waiting on a decision in the Florida case as to when that's going to get scheduled.
The interesting thing was that the Supreme Court, which when Jack Smith asked for a speedy decision on whether Trump could be tried, refused to even consider the matter, all of a sudden agrees to consider the matter so long as they can put it off, which is exactly what Trump wanted. Isn't that a little bit of thumb on the scale?
It could be. Now, you know, it only takes four justices to want to hear a case.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you've got three solid ones there with Thomas, Alito, and Gorsuch.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly Coney Barrett was the fourth vote. Although you never know. I mean, you know, Brown Jackson or Kagan could have said, no, it's an important thing. We should decide it on this immunity issue. So we'll know more during the oral argument as to how people are.
But even if they agreed to take it up, what are they postponing taking it up until April?
Yeah, that was, I don't think that was necessary. And, you know, the argument that, well, they were going to give Trump a win previously, but they were going to, you know, give him a loss on the immunity argument, may have been wishful thinking. We'll just have to see. But we're not going to know anything until April on that issue.
Well, that's for sure.
Yeah. So that brings us back to the State of the Union.
Okay.
Coming up, and that's important for Biden. You know, last year he proved himself more than capable among all this stuff that was going around about his age, his mental acuity. So he's got to replicate that this year. He's mm-hmm. got to come out, sound strong. And last year, remember, he had lived some things. He met the challenges of the moment. We'll have to see how he does on this one. And it's going to be it's really his first major campaign speech. this is what we've done, and this is what I propose we do. And mm-hmm. it gets a fairly large audience. So we have that. But the idea of that rankles the Republicans so much that our Pennsylvania congressman, the infamous Scott Perry,
former head of the Freedom Caucus.
Yeah, and Jeffrey Clark's promoter,
right,
came out and said to Mike Johnson, "Let's cancel the speech. Don't let him talk."
Right.
they don't want people to hear certain things. It's not enough.
Well, they don't want people to hear anything that's not what they're saying.
That's where I was going.
Yeah.
It's not enough to hear our side of the story. How dare we hear your side of the story?
Yeah, yeah.
So, but that's not going to happen. We're going to have that. And there's a...
Well, the CPAC conference, you mentioned it last week, the speaker at the CPAC conference who said, we're here to bury democracy and we're going to do it now, replacing it with us. So right. There's Scott Perry. He's part of that movement.
Oh, yes. Yeah, and Tuberville.
Is anybody in the Congress stupider than Tommy Tuberville? Did you see Tommy Tuberville's interview where he was asked about the Alabama ruling against IVF?
Yeah, he had no idea.
He had no idea what they were talking about.
Yeah, had no idea, and he had no idea what he was talking about.
Right, right. That's right, because what he said was he supported it and he opposed it simultaneously.
Simultaneously,
yeah.
That's right.
Right.
Meanwhile, down in Alabama, they're having all sorts of problems with it because they just passed another, or they're passing a bill to protect IVF, but they haven't changed the underlying law, the underlying notion of it that a fertilized embryo is a person.
Yeah, so I don't understand how that works. You're a lawyer. Explain this. Their Supreme Court said, the embryos are living people. Therefore, you can't destroy the embryos. Now they pass a law that says anybody who destroys an embryo can't be prosecuted. How does that comport with what the Supreme Court just said?
It doesn't.
It doesn't.
But they're pro-life. But they're pro-life.
But how can they even do that? It doesn't that, on its face, on the oppose the court ruling about the Constitution of Alabama?
Well, remember, most of the voters in Alabama are no smarter than Tommy Tuberville. So people aren't going to follow it that closely. And it doesn't really apply in Alabama because Alabama's a solid red state. But it's up to the Democrats, are going to bring this type of reasoning after the Dobbs decision all across the country. And it's going to still be a major point.
No, but what I don't understand is why, for example, a lawyer who follows the reasoning of the decision outlawing IVF in Alabama, why doesn't a lawyer come and say, wait a minute, this law is unconstitutional, get rid of it? And then they've undone exactly what they just did. Isn't that possible?
Well, yeah, but the Republicans certainly don't want to get into the constitutionality of this because there's a problem that would put it all, put it, first of all, on the nationwide agenda. And there's a problem with their adherence to this idea of originalism because nowhere in 1789, 76, 89, did anybody think that they didn't even know what a frozen embryo is. Let alone, was there any recognition that that was a person? Or, they don't want to have to decide this in the courts if they can avoid it.
But can they avoid it? Can the personhood ask the movement for recognizing embryos as persons, and there is such a movement, can they allow that law to stand? I can understand that the Republicans don't want it brought up, but can those people manage to let it go by?
We'll find out. We'll find out. It's both a legal and a political strategy that they have to decide whether they take this somewhere. And of course, then you also have to have a person who has standing to bring the lawsuit. So, and there, I guess there are, you know, there are women or couples that deal with frozen embryos, so they may have standing. But of course, with the law, that they're going to say, hey, you can't prosecute us. So what difference? But the issue is, don't we have a right to, you know, go through IVF? And if there are embryos that don't survive, don't we have a right to refuse to implant them or do with those that are not?
That's your viewpoint. I can't believe that is the viewpoint of people who believe that these souls exist independent of embodiment. Go along with you. That's a problem. Not for me, but it seems to me that there's a big movement out there that's going to find this a problem.
I'm waiting for the other, you know, for the people who oppose this position, you know, who are pro-IVF, to be as creative in their lawsuits and start doing things like saying, well, I've got 50 frozen embryos waiting for implantation. I want to deduct them from my income tax.
Right.
As dependents.
Right.
Stuff like that.
Right.
And then you get into the federal courts. And then you get the you know, federal courts are going to have to say whether they're people or whether they're persons or they're not persons.
Maybe they'll discover that there's a category of people that who are dependents, but you can't deduct them.
Well,
why not? You could do anything. I mean, you could do anything.
Well, sure, but Congress hasn't set that category. So,
no, but the point of the Federalist Society is to make up the law.
Right.
They're not. The whole thrust of the MAGA movement is to get rid of the legislature, right? And to do whatever you want and can do so that you have law by fiat. And they've got control of the judiciary, and the judiciary can do that. And that's the point of these coming elections. These coming elections are not so much whether Biden wins or Trump wins as it is whether you're going to have a complete reordering of the Constitution. You can amend the Constitution if the courts say this is what the Constitution means, and it means something completely different than what you, for the last 200 some odd years, we thought it meant. But there's nobody to take it to because the Supreme Court said, well, that's what it is. You don't have to have a constitutional convention. You can do that, right?
Perhaps.
Well, I think that's what they're aiming at. It's not Trump. It's a whole movement.
Yeah, it's a whole movement that is beholden to Trump for making that judiciary.
That's right. That's right, but now they've got that judiciary, and that judiciary can rewrite the Constitution without you or me or a convention or the majority or anything, because those five people want to do it. They could do it.
Great.
And it's not just five people, right? As we know, there's hundreds of judges that belong to the MAGA movement that Trump put in power.
Yeah, and the Federalist Society.
And if the Republicans win control of the Senate, and of course, if Trump gets elected, they will have one control of the Senate. It's inconceivable that he can become president and the Senate doesn't switch. Then that's basically a different constitution than the one you and I and everybody else thinks we're living under. And they make no bones about it. They tell you they're going to do it.
Right, right.
That's really what's at stake in this election.
Yes. And although, I mean, right now, what it looks like is the House is going to flip back to the Democrats. The Senate, there's good odds that it will flip to the Republicans. The Democratic seats are in several places in enough jeopardy for that. They've already lost West Virginia, in effect.
And if the Senate switches, the next cycle of Senate elections are not favorable to the Democrats at all. It's going to stay in Republican hands for quite a while.
And that'll mean that even if Biden wins, he won't be able to get much through.
No, he won't get much through. But if the Republicans win, they will get a lot through. The MAGA will get a lot through. The fascist movement will gain strength.
that's presuming that they have their leader, their next leader, since it's not going to be Mitch McConnell, is as effective as McConnell.
Well, that's interesting now. Cornyn says he's running. Yeah. Trump is trying to get Daines to run against Cornyn.
Right.
That's interesting. Barrasso looks like he's going to drop out because he doesn't have the votes, but he'll become the whip. I don't know about Thune. Thune strikes me as the weakest link in that chain. And if he runs against Cornyn and Daines, you know, who knows?
Well, Thune made his move by endorsing Trump last week.
He did, yes.
But it's not going to do him any good. But as a lot of things.
But Trump came out for Daines as soon as Thune endorsed him.
Right. Right. So, like I said, they never learn that Trump will stab you in the back. He'll take what you give him and then throw you under the bus.
Yeah, that's them as individuals. But the point is the fascist movement that controls the Republican Party is rolling on.
Yes.
And if Trump gets elected, that means they will control the Senate.
But I thought I saw something late in the week that said Trump and Viktor Orban are going to meet.
Yes. Trump is going to go to Europe to meet with Viktor Orban.
To learn how to be more of a fascist.
I guess. Maybe he's going to take lessons in Hungarian. I don't know. Or get a cook who does goulash to bring him to America.
Oh.
I don't know. But
I don't think he likes goulash, unless you put a lot of ketchup on it.
Yeah.
But anyway,
but the point is, he makes no bones about the fact that he's united with all these fascists.
That's the big difference is he has made it that you can say the quiet part out loud.
Yeah,
and there's no resistance in the Republican Party to that, or very little.
Well, whoever did resist got thrown out. They weren't great to begin with, but whatever they were, they got thrown out.
Yeah, I mean, Mitt Romney says he's not running again. He's part of the resistance, but not much.
No, but he also says he objects to his foreign policy. He doesn't object to his Trump's. He doesn't object to Trump's domestic policy, but basically he doesn't like his character. But his domestic policy is what's a great menace to the American people. The fascist domestic policy does not benefit working people, small business people, professionals. It doesn't benefit women. It definitely doesn't benefit immigrants. It benefits only big business.
Yeah, and millionaires and billionaires.
Yeah, yes, exactly right. People who own wealth.
More tax credits.
Yeah. So when Romney says he likes part of his domestic policy, so where's the opposition? There's no opposition there.
Not in the Republican Party.
No, there isn't any. And that's what's at stake in the election. If you're looking at boycotting or doing something else, look back on the history of Germany when Hitler came with his party to contest whether or not they could get into power. And the opposition split. And even though the opposition outnumbered and would have outgotten, you know, the majority, they split. And he got the plurality and came to power and abolished elections. And you say, well, it was Germany. It can't happen here. When it happened there, they said it can't happen there. After all, Germany was the country of Beethoven and Bach and, God, you know, great culture of every sort, high culture. How could they become brutes? But they did.
They did. And that's part of the worry. It's a big part of the worry.
But that's really what's at stake this year, right?
Yeah. And like we said, they're out to really abolish things and to run the government under martial law.
And to direct that martial law directly at the average person in the country, in our country. They're not doing it to make working people or small business people or professionals live a good life. They're doing it to subordinate them to make sure that they can't object to increasing the inequality that we are living in now and increasing the ownership of wealth that is so skewed. That's what they're doing it for. Everybody will to subordinate women.
Right. And the tactic is to divide people.
Yeah.
And to plant people's hatred of the others.
That's right. Whip up racism. I was just talking with some people who I have a relative who lives abroad, has a job abroad, raising her kid abroad, time for the kid to go to college. What college will the kid go to? Doesn't want to go to college in America. Why? Too violent, afraid of people with guns, doesn't want to subject herself to that environment. This is a kid. This is a teenager talking.
Yeah, that's the new image of America abroad.
Yeah, that's how she thinks of America. And that'll get worse. And that's not normal. That's not how we should that's not how we should live.
No. Meanwhile, I wanted to get back and discuss a couple of things about the State of the Union. We have a local story where Congressman Matt Cartwright has invited the police officer in Scranton who was shot twice in the head in a gang-related shooting and has made a really miraculous type of recovery. He's going to be in the gallery and acknowledged. Locally, they always try to portray the Democrats as weak on crime and whatever, and this is going to be a big boost for Matt Cartwright to be able to say, hey, look, I'm supporting police and against gangs and what have you. And then the other angle is that the response to the State of the Union is going to be delivered by a state senator, not a U.S. senator, a state senator named Katie Britt, whose stock has been rising in the Republican Party.
She's from South Carolina.
Yeah. And we'll have to see what she has to say. You know, we've been through this before with the rising stars. If you remember Bobby Jindal, the next president.
Yeah.
Scott Walker and what happened.
Even Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Yes. Well, she's now a governor. And she's maybe on the short list for vice president, although I don't think so, but we'll see. So we're going to be treated to that as a follow-up to the State of the Union. And
so that's this coming week.
That's this coming week. And also...
But the government didn't shut down.
The speaker who said that we're not going to run this government by continuing resolutions has now agreed to a series of continuing resolutions.
Which got passed into law, right?
Yes. One of which will be expiring next Saturday and the other one on the 22nd. So they still have to come up with more continuing resolutions. And meanwhile, he's watching his flank because there is talk by Brian Fitzpatrick, the Republican congressman from southeastern Pennsylvania, about bringing the Ukraine vote to the floor and bypassing the speaker. And if that happens and it passes, that would be a major, major defeat for the speaker, for Trump. And you may see another a coup saying, hey, you couldn't get this done, Mr. Speaker, you're out. And then we're going to go through that all the other nonsense that followed it before.
Okay, well, that's coming up this week. Some of it may come, for sure. Some of it might come.
Yeah.
We'll see. So we'll see you next week.
We will see you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.